Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Last week, it was announced that Bob Dylan won the Nobel Prize in Literature. We have been listening to him for over half a century and knew that we wanted to do a program on Bob Dylan. So it is today, and it's this hour.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Written by Bob Dylan in 1962 and released as a single on his album The Free Will in Bob Dylan in 1963. It's probably the song that more people have recorded than any other of his, some would say, masterpieces. Many years ago in the late 1960s, when I was doing student teaching at a high school in Iowa, I had the idea of a unit on Bob Dylan as a poet we should study. And the master English teacher who was my mentor that semester heartily agreed, so I was delighted to read about a Harvard Classics professor, Richard F. Thomas, who teaches a freshman seminar titled Bob Dylan. It examines Dylan as an enduring and continuing musical, literary, and general cultural phenomenon in the context of popular and higher literary culture of the last 55 years, also in the context of those long-lived literary and musical cultures with which he works, in more recent lyrics going back to Homer, Virgil, and the entire Western literary canon. Our guest this hour teaches that course, and we'll hear about what he is teaching, and we'll listen to a lot of Bob Dylan this hour. Professor Richard Thomas is the George Martin Lane Professor of the Classics at Harvard University, where he teaches that freshman seminar on Bob Dylan. He served as the Director of Undergraduate Studies, Director of Graduate Studies, and Department Chair in the Department of the Classics. We'll be welcoming phone calls during the course of the hour, asking you specifically to name a Bob Dylan tune that has stayed with you over 55 years, or 45, or 35, or 25, or just recently, if you've just come upon his music. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR. And you can also find us on Facebook, where we love to read your messages, and that's the Catholic Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Richard Thomas, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. It's good to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you're teaching this course. I wish we could all sit in on the course. Was it easy to get this as a part of the Harvard Classics curriculum or not?
Yeah, it's a freshman seminar, so it's not really departmental, but for that reason, I just do it every 4 years. The first time in 2004, it took a bit of persuading, but these days, it's a fairly commonplace, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very, very thorough, you go chronologically for his musical life, right? Or his life when he became popular on the scene, from Hibbing, Minnesota to New York.
Yeah, we start in the village, but we also look at the movie, Todd Haynes' movie, I'm Not There, because I tried to get the students to think about persona and masks and the characters that Dylan has created over the years, yeah.
You also have the students read his memoir, and you call his memoir a work of genius, a sprawling Dylan prose song posing as an autobiography. I haven't read it, but your description of it makes me want to read it.
Oh, it's a must read. Yeah, it's terrific. Start with chapter two, which is wonderful.
So let's start with some of those early years and some of the early songs. I must say I was kind of growing up at that time, so those songs have stayed with me more than some of the more recent songs. But this journey from Hibbing, Minnesota, I've seen the place where he grew up in Hibbing, Minnesota. We go to Minnesota every year for vacation. And it's quite something to see the sign in Hibbing saying, Bob, please come back for the, whatever, 50th high school reunion, or where are you, Bob? We want to see you come back to Hibbing. That he came from where he came from.
Yeah, so I've actually been in the living room of the house.
Oh, have you?
In. Yeah, across from the high school. Yeah, as he said, he was sort of born to the wrong parents and the wrong place and so on, but that's what genius can turn up anywhere. So he, of course, we all know the story. He went eventually to the University of Minnesota, didn't probably go to any classes, and then mostly moved from the sort of electric of his high school days to folk music in Dinkytown, and then arrived in New York just at the right time. So it's a combination of sort of his genius, his ability to change genres, and what was happening in this country. I heard him in New York. I'm about 9 years younger than him, so I started listening to that song, which my school chorus sang, the one you just played, when I was about 13, 14, and I've been going ever since, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the fact that he did Latin in school in Hibbings, Minnesota, and you say, I'm not sure how much. He's always read eclectically. That's why I think in recent years he's come to classic stuff.
Yeah, I don't really connect the Latin club of his junior year at Hibbing High with what he's been doing really since 2001, where his lyrics have become much more intertextual, not just classical references, but Virgil, Ovid, Dante. He's always sort of had the Bible and various other literary works sort of in his lyrics, but it's become much much more conscious. And I think he's of course been accused of plagiarism, but basically this is how poets like Virgil work. This is how poets like Milton work. You sort of layer your own text with other texts, and those layers, when recognized, sort of touch off new meanings in fascinating ways.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of that eclectic reading. Can you tell me about the couple he stayed with in New York City, where they had all kinds of books and other things in their apartment, and he just started reading, and what he read at that time?
Yeah, so this is Ray Gooch, and in New York City, who I thought was a fictional character, but A.J. Weberman, the Dylan garbologist, actually sent me an email saying that he was a true figure. But basically, Dylan is in this library. I think the scene is largely fictional. It's in that second chapter of Chronicles that I mentioned, and he just talks about the books that are in the library, and some of them, so Ovid's Metamorphoses is there, which he calls the scary horror tale. But then he has Tacitus's letters to Brutus, which Tacitus, the historian, never wrote letters to Brutus, so there's a lot of pastiche going on. He's very concerned with Thucydides, and this 2004, when we were in Iraq, and I think he's sort of reading people reading about and talking about Thucydides and the way our invasion perhaps was not wise if one had read Thucydides. So, he's both recording a truth of some sort, but he's that's why I say it's posing as an autobiography or as a memoir.
Mm-hmm. Old songs have taught him, you have said, I believe, that there was nothing new on this earth. Did he write something that was new on this earth?
Much of his art is new on this earth, and even if you find other bits of text in a song, the creation of that song is not something that anybody but Dylan could do, I think. So I think I don't call him a singer or a songwriter. I don't call him a poet. He's really a phenomenon that's hard to characterize in terms of any genre, I think.
Mm-hmm. We're going to play a lot of Dylan during the course of this hour. I want for you to tell us about this song. This song was always meaningful to me back in the 1960s. It's a very powerful, very direct song about race in this country. And let's hear a little bit of Oxford Town, and then we'll ask the professor to tell us more about what he hears in this song that was recorded in 1962 for his second album, The Free Will and Bob Dylan.
Everybody's got their heads bowed down. Sun don't shine above the ground. Ain't going down to Oxford Town. Mm-hmm. guns and clubs followed him down, all because his face was brown. Better get away from Oxford town. Oxford town around the bend, come to the door, he couldn't get in, all because of the color of his skin. What do you think about that, my friend? Yes, son, we got met with a tear gas bomb. I don't even know why we come, going back where we come from. Oxford town in the afternoon, everybody singing a sorrowful tune. Two men died neath the Mississippi moon. Somebody better investigate soon.
The early years, that song is such a powerful song about race, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. So going back to 62 at the University of Mississippi, so in Oxford town. A wonderful song, a song of its moment, but one that lives beyond its moment. I think that's part of the thing about Dylan protest lyric or civil rights, that they last. They don't just belong in their time. It's not like I ain't marching anymore. It's a wonderful song. We're still only at 1963, I note, and of course he's been tried really since that time, including with the next album, Another Side of Bob Dylan, to get away from the labeling as simply a protest singer. That was just something that he did. I'm sure he was sincere about it, but it's the art, and the art of that song, too, so which engages us, the listener. What do you think about that, my friend? Following the couplet, he came into the door, couldn't get in, all because of the color of his skin. So it sort of, it includes all of us in it. The line, somebody better investigate soon.
Right.
So leaving that out, hanging out there, and then of course the final image of everybody got their head bowed down, the sun don't shine above the ground. Either going down to Oxford town, this brings in a poetry that again takes one beyond the protest. So the poetry is always there, and music is always there, along with the message, which is sublimated through art.
Mm-hmm. He evidently, and I guess this is understandable, all of those songs, there were so many of them, with God on Our Side, Masters of War, A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall, Oxford Town, Blowing in the Wind, many of those early songs. So all of a sudden he becomes this voice of a whole generation, and evidently he hated that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, because for him art was prior to everything, and I think that's why the next 3 years, 64, 65, 66, which saw these four albums, which if he died after Blonde on Blonde, he would still be getting the Nobel, I hope, in my view. But in a sense, he's the folk singer who starts out in Minneapolis and then goes to the Village has become something completely else, and he clearly wanted not to be characterized, not to be pigeonholed by those, again, wonderful earlier songs, protest songs.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people, a lot of rock critics and music critics have said this next song we're going to hear is his best song ever. I guess I'll have to ask you that question as well. But like a Rolling Stone, we have a magazine, the Rolling Stone, we have this song, which is quite a remarkable song. Is this the one that we should really remember him for? Why is this one cited so frequently?
Like a Rolling Stone? Well, all sorts of reason, from Al Cooper's sort of organ, which was sort of almost spontaneous, but to the identity of the addressee, to the poetry again, to the images that are there, and to the sort of tune, to the intonation, the ends of the lines, just any number of reasons. I think it's a perfect song. It's not the only perfect song, and it's not necessarily my favorite song in any given week. It sort of comes and goes. In performance, the best performance I saw of it was a few years ago, where he used the a strobe light to basically emphasize the final line, like a Rolling Stone, no direction home, like a Rolling Stone. And so it, as always with Dylan, performance is what he cares about most, and that song works very well. That's why it was a closer for so many hundreds, thousands, maybe, I forget the exact number of concerts.
Mm. It's interesting what you say, performance is what he cares about most. For, by all indications, he doesn't seem to care very much about the Nobel Prize, does he?
I'm sure he does. I trust he will go to Stockholm on December 10th, but I think on some level, you know, yeah, I'm not sure how deeply he cares about it. He tried to get, he got a honorary degree at Princeton in 1970 and then at University of St. Andrews and turned up for those. Mm. I've been trying to get him one here for a few years, but he's also turned down various things. I suspect he would go, and I'm sure he,
I'm sure
he cares. And I'm sure he sees that the Nobel Committee recognized what the phenomenon of Bob Dylan is. It's not just a, he's not just a lyricist or just this or that.
Yeah. It, what you said is interesting, performance being so very important to him. He's 75 and he's still performing all the time, a pretty rigorous schedule. Why is it that performance is so important to him?
Well, think, why is it important to an actor, no matter how old? There's something about, I think, the energy of a concert that fires Dylan up. He doesn't talk to the audience anymore, which is fine, but he clearly, you know, performance is clearly what he does. It's his art, and it's not just like the, say, the, you know, a band that might come out with the same arrangement that they used in 1971 and keep playing it. Everything's new. These terrific bands he's had since the late 1990s. Yeah, he clearly lives for it. Well, I shouldn't say he lives for it, but it's part of what he lives for. And we can't really imagine him not performing. I mean, I hope he'll keep writing as well, because we have all of this, the great songs that he's written in the last 20-plus years.
Well, welcome phone calls for our guest and listen to more Dylan during the course of this hour. This is a fun hour to do, let me tell you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Professor Richard Thomas is our guest. Came to our attention when we read about him last week, the day after it was announced that Bob Dylan would be receiving the Nobel Prize for Literature this year. And we found that Professor Richard Thomas teaches this course. It's a seminar for freshmen, and it is titled Dylan. And they go through his early years all the way to the present. His teaching, our guest teaching and research, focuses on literary history, metrics, and prose. He's particularly interested in classical literature and culture, and he looks at Dylan through those lights as well, and we'll talk about that as we carry on. So you have songs, I'm sure, that have been incredibly important to you for the past maybe 55 years even, Dylan songs. We'd love to hear from you as we carry on this hour. 800-486-8655 is our number. And before we start taking calls, just we need to hear a little bit of Like a Rolling Stone.
So fine, threw the bums a dime in your prime, didn't you? People call, say beware doll, you're bound to fall, you thought they were all kidding you. You used to laugh about everybody that was hanging out. Talk so loud. Now you don't seem so proud about having to be scrounging your next meal. How does it feel? How does it feel to be without a home?
We're talking about Bob Dylan this hour of the program because he's going to receive the Nobel Prize in Literature. He's going to accept it. He's already received it. He has to accept it pretty soon. And our guest teaches a seminar for freshmen at Harvard University. One of his students says one of the coolest things in this seminar is learning about Bob Dylan from a world expert on Virgil. And that's what we're doing. Both are poets and both are lyricists, even more than that. We have a lot of phone calls coming in. We'll start with Jim in Rice Lake. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Kathleen. I just wanted to ask the professor, Bob Dylan, he was mentioning the importance of performance to Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan once said that the greatest balladeer he ever heard or saw was Liam Clancy of the Clancy Brothers, the Irish folk singer who was a friend of mine. They were friends and early influences on each other in the early 60s in Greenwich Village when they were just up and coming. Does the professor have any comments or knowledge of the relationship? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Jim.
Sure, Jim. Thanks. Yeah. Well, I know pretty much what most know. It's Scorsese's documentary, No Direction Home, has a clip of Clancy there, and of course there's this wonderful YouTube you may have seen of Butcher Boy of singing with Tommy Makem, which you know, clearly musically they were very important to Dylan. And yeah, you're right. I think it was reciprocated. How much they hung out together, I don't know. That they sang at the 1992 30th anniversary sort of indicates, you know, maybe that they were had some relationship, but I don't know about that. So. But yeah, great example.
Let's talk about some of his other influences. Certainly, Woody Guthrie was front and center.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think he's come back to Guthrie. He seemed to go away for a bit, but his first original song on Bob Dylan, Song to Woody, most of the songs on that album are of course, not written by Dylan, but rearranged and so on. But that song shows from the very beginning. And of course, in going to New York City, he's picking up on Guthrie, but even back in Minnesota, he talked about riding the rails and disappearing for a weekend, which was part, I think, of the creative fiction of his life. So, but and then one of the greatest Guthrie accolades is on the Bootlegs Volumes 1-3, Last Thoughts on Woody Guthrie, which is a poem, and just fantastic poem and fantastic encapsulating of all that Guthrie was. And of course he met Guthrie in the hospital soon after he arrived in New York.
We go to Willem and Colfax next. Hi, Willem.
Hi. Oh, there's a song, I can't remember the title of it, but it's about a guy that goes to war and his mother encourages him to go to war and he comes back all shot up and she kind of, I can't remember the name of that song.
John Brown?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the other song I really love, you know, there's too many, I mean, I like them all, but My Heart is in the Highlands, I really enjoy that. And I think that he deserves the prize just for his book, which is absolutely fantastic, I think. I really loved reading that, and I hope he comes out with Chronicles 2 or whatever, because it is really one of my favorite books.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree completely. It's just, it's like a Dylan song again. And yeah, the songs you mentioned, Highlands is just an amazing song, which begins My Heart's in the Highlands, which is a Robert Burns poem. So we're back in the 18th century, and then a few verses later, I'm listening to Neil Young, I Gotta Turn Down the Sound. so that this is part of the creation that Dylan, he takes literary and other things and creates new worlds, which are just unique. And back to the question of, you know, did he create something great? Yeah, everything, or much of, you know, he had his off years, but yeah, that's a great song. And then in that song, Highlands, which is from 1997, he recalls sort of going into a restaurant, and the world is clearly the late 20s, third wave feminist world that doesn't suit that the singer, let's call him, who walks into that restaurant no longer belongs in that world. And so, you know, Dylan is basically singing things which are age appropriate. He's not singing about himself necessarily, but he's singing about the times are changing, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for your call, Willem. Our number is 800-486-8655. Tom in Superior, hi.
Hi. Just a short anecdote. Bob's a cousin of mine. And he's a contemporary of my brother-in-law, a little bit younger.
Oh.
And when he was going to the University of Minnesota, we went down to see my brother-in-law. And he asked him, he said, how's Bobby doing? He said, boy, I don't know. He's living upstairs of a bar in Dinkytown, and all he's doing is smoking pot and writing poetry.
Yeah, I've been in the bar in Dinkytown, and they're very proud of their upstairs lodger, I guess. But he was, of course, playing music too, right?
Oh, yeah, he was playing
a lot of music upstairs. Do you have more insights? I'm sure your listeners like me would
Yes, be interested. We're very interested. Tom?
Well, the rest of my insights I probably don't want to give you over the air.
Well, I'll take the call off later on.
Should we do
All
that?
Right.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll have you two get in touch with each other. We'll put you on hold and have KP get your phone number so that you can have further correspondence with Bob Dylan's cousin. You don't have too many of those phone calls,
so,
right?
So I should say, I mean, that was fascinating, but Bob Dylan, the human, living human being, as opposed to what he's creating, is not, I think, what is the most important thing. But anyway, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Dan in Wauwatosa, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Corita, I wonder if your guest would know the background of that. You know, Dylan didn't have that many songs that he used female names in and sang about. This is this earlier years where it was just acoustic was so much, I thought, more pure and better than his later years when it was harder to understand him because of the rock music and the way he was slurring his words.
Yeah.
But the earlier years of the acoustic, he's the professor knows much about Corita, where you've been so long. Thanks.
Thank you. I named my dog after that song. Best dog I ever had, Corita.
Oh, really?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, it's a great song. And it clearly comes from a place that's quite old, but at the same time, the voice, the sort of plaintive voice of the singer of Dylan, the young Dylan, on that is very impelling. I think To Ramona is similar in nature to me. To me, that To Ramona is just an amazing song too. But yeah, love it. Love Corita.
All right, let's go a little bit up in time now to times where we have really distinct Greek-Roman references. We have a couple songs here. Let me ask you about, New Roman Kings?
Early Roman Kings.
Right, early,
yeah,
okay.
Early Roman Kings, yeah. So, the title was put out, and that he had already put out... Early Roman Kings is on Tempest, which came out in 2012. And by then, he had done 2001 and 2006, two albums, which had classical intertexts on them, Virgil and Ovid. So when we saw the title Early Roman Kings, our hopes were up that there'd be more classics on it. Turns out the Early Roman Kings are a Latino gang from the 1950s and 60s. In Bronx or Brooklyn, I'm not sure. But anyway, so that fooled us. And so the opening verse is about what the gang wears. But then the next verse is, and I won't get it exactly, but early Roman kings and the early dawn coming down the mountains distributing the corn. And that does work for Romulus and other Roman kings who would be distributing the corn to keep the people of Rome quiet. So again, that's a sort of a reversal. And then the final, I think, no, later on, there's the singer says, I'd like to strip you of life, strip you of breath, take you down to the house of death, which is an exact quote of a translation of the Odyssey, the words that Odysseus is saying to the Cyclops, whom he's just blinded. So again, it's like Highlands. It's just a beautiful, wonderful, driving song, a menacing song, and Dylan's voice is deliberately menacing.
Mm.
But it's his world that is his creation out of these fragments of other literary and cultural themes.
Here's a little bit of Early Roman Kings, 2012, Dylan.
The peddlers and the meddlers. they buy and they sell. They destroyed your city. They'll destroy you as well. The lecherous and treacherous, a hair meant for leather, each of them bigger than all men put together. Sluggers and muggers, wearing fancy gold rings. All the women going crazy for the LA Roman king.
Talking about Bob Dylan this hour because he's receiving the Nobel Prize in Literature. Professor Richard Thomas, George Martin Lane Professor of the Classics at Harvard University, who is teaching and has taught this, I think, four times now, a seminar, a freshman seminar on Bob Dylan. It's in progress right now. And we're welcoming phone calls, too, as we go through a little bit of Dylan's life and through some of his music. Let's go to Mike in Madison next. Hi, Mike.
Hi, thank you for having this show and the professor for giving this information. I would like to hear if he has any insights into Bob Dylan made the song Hurricane from the Desire album, and also there was a movie about it, about Hurricane Carter, the boxer, who actually spoke in Madison one year. I took my oldest son there. And it was a very enlightening talk, but anyway, I love that song.
Yeah, it's funny. I asked the applicants for the seminar, the freshman seminar, these are 17, 18-year-old kids, what their favorite song is before they come in, and a number of them say Hurricane, and I think they, because even though the film was made before they were born, it stuck around for that reason. Yeah, it's a great song in the tradition of, you know, sort of outlaw songs or injustice songs. So Hattie Carroll and so on, Hollis Brown slightly different, but Joey, which is a particularly interesting one, the mafia figure Joey, who's sort of heroized in at least the melody of that song. Hurricane's not way up there for me, but that's just a personal taste, but I think it's the story of it, and again, the way Dylan actually creates the story of the car at night and not you know, recognizing and the injustice and the police basically talking the witness into perjury, and great song, yep.
Thanks, Mike, so much. Lynn in Delafield. Hi, Lynn.
Hello.
Hi, Lynn, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to mention that I honor Dylan by having his name on my license plate.
Oh, wow, lucky you. And, I'll have to check Massachusetts to see if it's
fake. He has many, many songs that are, really, really famous. One that means a lot to me is With God on Our Side.
Yep.
I wish they would play that, sometime.
Yeah, I'm sorry, we don't have that on our list today, but that's an important song forever.
Yeah, and starting out in the Midwest, just the lyrics of it. And again, it's a song that does mention specific historical moments, the Indians, World War One, and so on. But it doesn't get tied to any particular moment. I think it stays alive, and I think particularly towards the end, I'm as wary as hell, and the final ending, was Judas Iscariot.
It's an important song. Thank you so much, Lynn, for the call. I love this song, and it's back in the 60s. I guess most of my Dylan songs are, but I had the great pleasure of interviewing Judy Collins a couple times, and once, in addition to singing Amazing Grace to me in the studio, which I'll always remember, she told me this story of the song that we're about to hear. She was, I believe, in Pennsylvania, staying at a big house, and there were other people in the house. And she said she woke up in the middle of the night, and right down the hall was Bob Dylan, and he was composing this song. I just love this song because of the way it sounds and because of the words. He can really use the words in this.
Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there is no place I'm going to. Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you.
I just love the words in that song. I could sing it every day, I think, Professor.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's that you're really talking with that one. That to me has the lyric. Yes, to dance beneath the diamond sky with one hand waving free,
yes.
Circled by the circus sand, silhouetted by the sea. And so on. Just pure poetry. I think that's the sort of poem that, along with It's All Right Ma, that Bradley on 60 Minutes years ago asked Dylan where these songs came from, and he said, I don't know. And I think he was being genuine.
Mm-hmm.
He also said, I can't do those things, but I can do other things. And I think I'd like, for those who start listening in the 70s, listen to pick up Time Out of Mind. I'm just getting my ad in here.
Sure.
Time Out of Mind, 1997. Love and Theft, 2001. Modern Times, 2006. And Tempest, 2012. You'll find a whole new Dylan, familiar, but... same sort of poet, but doing different things, new things.
Let's go next to Steve in Madison. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your time. Regarding the source of the songs, I just went online last night to read Bob Dylan's 2015 Grammy acceptance speech. And in that acceptance speech, he gave mention of many, many songwriters who are important to him, and the way one song led into another. So if people are interested, they can find that 2015 acceptance speech and find out information there.
Yeah, that's a remarkable speech, wonderful speech, where he actually talks about his art, which he does here and there online and notes and elsewhere in Chronicles 2, Chronicles Volume 1 as well. But I'm hoping that that's a foretaste of the Nobel speech, which, of course, will be very interesting.
Mm-hmm. It must be, you think about people who have his kind of stature, the spokesperson for a generation, all of this attention poured on his lyrics and who he was and his symbol of an entire generation and of an angst of a whole decade, actually. And he, I know, has talked about people coming to his house in Woodstock and making pilgrimages from California and people staring at him all over, and made the comment, which I thought was interesting, you can't be an observer if people are observing you all the time. It just sort of takes away who you are and what you do.
Yeah, and I mean, imagine that you could do that in 1967, 68. You could actually drive to to somebody like Dylan's house and go through his garbage. And actually, this guy Weberman actually had a phone conversation with Bob. They're sort of going back and forth about it. So that, and I think he's realized from the beginning the difficulty of having a public. He's survived, as so many of his same generation didn't survive. But I think by being an artist who cared about his art and who was protecting his life, and particularly that of his family when he started having them up in Woodstock.
Mm-hmm. More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about Bob Dylan. We have a chance to do so because he got the Nobel Prize, as you know, last week, and our guest is currently in the midst of teaching a seminar at Harvard that is titled Dylan, and it's for freshman students, and he is looking at literary references as well with respect to Virgil and other classic poets, because he is a professor of the classics at Harvard University. Professor Richard Thomas is our guest. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Dylan from this one is 1975, Dylan from the 70s.
Twas in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, the road was full of mud. I came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. And if I pass this way again, you can rest assured I'll always do my best for her, on that I give my word. In a world of steel-eyed death and men who are fighting to be warm, come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm. Not a word was spoke between us, there was little risk involved. Everything up to that point had been left unresolved. Try imagining a place where it's always safe and warm. Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm.
So we go to Josh in Milwaukee next. Hi, Josh.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I just wanted to mention two of the kind of lesser talked about Dylan albums that I love, and whichever one you want to comment on would be great. I love the song cycles from the Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid album, especially the Billy number 4, and I think that some of those lyrics are great in the way that he reimagines and reinterprets that relationship between those two guys in history. And then also with the album Oh Mercy from, I believe, 1989, I've heard that he talks about how they recorded all those songs in the nighttime because he felt that that album needed kind of an after-dark sort of feel to it, and I just wanted to know what you've heard about that.
Yeah, I mean, he talks about that. One of the chapters is really about that album, making of that album. Menuez, I think it's chapter 5. But yeah, great album. And part of the, if it was a comeback, if he ever went away, but part of the sort of the new Dylan of the 21st century, really sort of starting with that album in many ways. The Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid album, I agree, Billy 4, I mean, I like a couple of those, but Guns Across the Border, Coming For You, the fact that it addresses Billy, you're so far away from home, so the narrator or the poet, the singer, is sort of has an intimacy with Billy, which we again share, and so that song, the album, of course, known mostly in performance from the Put My Guns in the Ground. I'm just blanking on the title, but you know the song.
Thanks.
Yeah, and it's also the, it was, of course, made for Sam Peckinpah. He went down to work on it for Sam Peckinpah's movie, which Bob stars in too, and it's this wonderful scene of the Dylan coming on as Slim Pickens is dying, and as the sun's going down, so this synesthesia, this combination of the music, the visual, and what's the human suffering that is the backdrop of it.
I'm really interested. 55 years is such a long time, and I'm interested in hearing you talk about, because I know you started doing the seminar in 2004. You don't do it every year, but I'm wondering about what it is that Dylan says to different generations. He certainly said one thing to my generation. I'm wondering what he's saying to 18-year-old students today.
Well, I think he sings about, sounds like a cliche, but he sings about what it's like to be human. I mean, love lost, death, pain, suffering, exile, political turmoil. So he's appropriate right now. A lot of those old songs, sometimes even the President of the United States and so on. I think the lyrics really sort of don't go away. He's of course drawing a great deal on sort of blues, folk traditions going back to Scotland in the 18th century or Appalachia, but he's sort of renewing them, reinvigorating them, and playing with great bands. Again, one can't underestimate the the music and these wonderful musicians who have been with him for years. So does that sort of, yeah.
Yeah, great. Let's go to Bill in Madison. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you today?
All right, Bill, how are you?
Good, thank you very much.
Sure.
One of my favorite Dylan songs is the long version of Desolation Row. Any idea, the background of that, wow, the words in there, and there's so much woven in.
Mm. Yeah, and before we get an answer, do you want to hear a little bit of it, Bill?
Absolutely.
All right, we can't play all 11 minutes and 21 seconds, but here's some of Desolation Row.
Praise be to Nero's Neptune. The Titanic sails at dawn. Everybody's shouting, which side are you on? And Ezra Pound and T.S. Eliot fighting in the captain's tower, while Calypso singers laugh at them and fishermen hold flowers. Between the windows of the sea, where lovely mermaids flow, and nobody has to think too much about Desolation Row.
There we go. We heard it. T.S. Eliot and Ezra Pound. Richard?
Yeah, while Calypso singers laugh at them. So again,
right.
Eliot and Pound there, although Eliot, not so much Pound, has always been important to Dylan, the artist. I think that, again, is sort of poking fun in the way that a lot of songs do. My Back Pages, Ballad of a Thin Man at the Academics, a song Nettie Moore, more recently, was it The World of Research Has Gone Berserk, Too Much Paperwork? But anyway, that the stanza, of course, that closes the song that comes next sort of reveals, yes, all these people that you mentioned, yes, I know them, they are quite lame. I had to rearrange their faces and give them all another name, so that sort of revealing in the key at the end there that that these are characters in the song, whether it's, you know, some people have seen Phil Oakes in Einstein disguised as Robin Hood. No, well, anyway, one of those, in one of those characters. So, but a beautiful song because of the, you know, the lyrics, the voice again, the voice, the number of people who say, oh, I can't stand Dylan's voice. Dylan's voice is an instrument which he can change at will. Mm-hmm. The wonderful bootleg version of him doing Yesterday, which sounds just like Paul McCartney, more or less.
Hmm. Why do you like that song so much, Bill?
It just has so much imagery in it, mm-hmm. and it's so powerful.
I agree, Bill.
You can view it from a political standpoint, from prisoners, you know, in the old days and the current days, and I just love it. And first I was turned on to the shorter version, and then I came across the longer version, and I loved it even more.
Hmm. Yeah. And Ophelia, the beautiful sort of image of Ophelia there, which is, you know, Shakespeare, but Dylan's sort of imagination sort of taking that and running with it to her death is quite romantic. She wears an iron vest and so on.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your call. And let's go to Steve in Madison, probably our last caller. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I had a question about one of Dylan's, the origin of one of his songs. I was a student in the mid-late 60s, and so, of course, his songs were part of the soundtrack of our whole time there. And in his song, A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall, I mean, we assumed it was about a nuclear holocaust.
Yeah. What is it about?
Well, I think it's about all sorts of things. It's about, it's pretty relevant now to global warming and fossil fuel use. It's about the environment being desolated. It's about, things being bad and getting bad, worse. I mean, I don't think it's about any specific It's in a moment in history, but it gets out of history because of the poetry of it.
Thank you so much, Professor Thomas, for being with us. I wish we could sit in your class, but thank you for getting a little class today. It was great.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to talk to you all. I noticed, I don't think we had a woman call us. But it was great to talk to the guys.
All right. Next time, come back and we'll talk to some female listeners. Richard Thomas, professor of the classics at Harvard University, who teaches a course on Bob Dylan. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this show, to KP Whaley for doing on-air production. And thanks very much for all of your calls, including Bob Dylan's cousin, huh?